Insulating homes, things that can be done really quickly, within a 6-month time frame, reducing that energy demand and providing people, everybody with the support, the information, the subsidies that are required to do that. That's the way. That's the solution to this. To the natural gas crisis. It is really disappointing that in the United States we see permitting reform being pushed as a solution when it's a false solution and one which will really safeguard fossil fuel interests, including the carbon billionaires, many of whom are actually pushing these sorts of changes at the expense of communities whose rights, indigenous people, will be harmed.
Ashfaq, we only have 10 yes. seconds. Have any of the carbon billionaires responded to your report?
Not that I'm aware of. I'm sure they will.
Well, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Ashfaq Khalfan is Climate Justice Director at Oxfam America, co-author of the new report, Carbon Billionaires. We will link to that report. He was speaking to us from London. Democracy Now! Is headed to Sharm el-Sheikh, where all next week we will be covering the UN Climate Summit there in Egypt, bringing you reports from on the ground, inside and outside the summit. That does it for our show, Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Reds, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Teosena, Tammy Warnoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astu, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, Mary Conlon. Special thanks to our Executive Director, Julie Crosby.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. This week, we'll see the official dedication of the National Native American Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C. The event includes a processional in the National Mall that includes Native veterans. It's just one of the events this week to honor the service and sacrifices of Native veterans. We'll give a preview of the event and hear about other ways Native veterans are being recognized heading into Veterans Day. We're back after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Election Day is here. Oklahoma is poised to make history with the likelihood of 3 Native Americans expected to serve in Congress. Incumbent Representative Tom Cole is heavily favored to be reelected to his seat. Mark Wayne Mullen is giving up his House seat and is leading in the race for U.S. Senate. Josh Burkeen is expected to win the race to fill Mullen's seat. All are Republicans and enrolled in Oklahoma tribes. One incumbent in Oklahoma faces a stiff challenge for re-election. Governor Kevin Stitt is a Republican and a citizen of the Cherokee Nation, but he's been at odds with the state's tribes since early in his first term. The Cherokee, Choctaw, Chickasaw, Seminole, and Muskogee Nations are among the tribes that have thrown their support to his Democratic opponent. Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. calls the governor's race the most important in the state's history. Among things Stitt has clashed with tribes over gaming compacts, he's also a aggressively pursued legal actions to limit tribal jurisdiction. At least 10 Native candidates are vying for congressional seats in the midterms, and many more are on the ballots in local and state races. 2 Native congressional incumbents are in tight races following redistricting. Pre-election polling shows New Mexico Republican Representative Yvette Harrell in a close race with her Democratic opponent. Harrell is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. Meanwhile, Kansas Democrat Sharice Davids, who was among the first 2 Native women elected to the House of Representatives in 2018, is facing strong competition from her Republican challenger. Davids is a citizen of the Ho-Chunk Nation. And in Alaska, Representative Mary Peltola has been campaigning to keep her seat. Peltola made history in September, becoming the first Alaska Native person, Yupik, to ever serve in Congress. She won the late Republican Congressman Don Young's seat in a special election. The Democrat has broad support from Alaska Native communities. In an interview with the National Native News in October, Peltola discussed serving Alaska Native and American Indian people, but also all people.
It's a serious job. And I don't see this as a stepping stone to anything else. I don't see this as a springboard to anything else. I really just very literally take this job for face value. I want to work hard for Alaskans.
Peltola has been endorsed by the Alaska Federation of Natives, the largest statewide Native organization in Alaska. The race for top leader of one of the largest tribes in the United States, the Navajo Nation, is underway. Current President Jonathan Nez is facing challenger Boone Igren. The tribe, which has the largest reservation in the U.S., located in the Four Corners region, was hit hard by COVID-19. Nez has led the tribe through the pandemic, issuing a number of emergency measures. Dropping mandates and fully reopening the Navajo Nation are issues the candidates disagree on. Nez says the tribe needs to continue to be cautious with COVID-19 and now with monkeypox.
We are utilizing those lessons learned from COVID-19. And right now we're just monitoring the situation. And, you know, I think eventually the government's going to have to step back, because the government has taught everyone what to do and what not to do.
Nygren says the Navajo Nation is ready to fully reopen and move forward from the pandemic.
The Navajo Nation, we've continued to stifle our communities, scare our people. And since I made my announcement on April 4th, being the first person to announce for president, I said it's about time we reopen 100%.
As Navajo voters head to the polls, both say they're focused on working hard for Navajo people to improve infrastructure, create jobs, and address social issues. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Program support by Penguin Random House, publisher of Probably Ruby by Lisa Bird Wilson, a novel about a Métis woman adopted by white parents who goes in search of her identity. More on this and other stories at prh.com/storiesoftheland. November is National Epilepsy Awareness Month. Call the Epilepsy and Seizures 24/7 helpline at 1-800-332-1000 to speak with an epilepsy information specialist. The Epilepsy Foundation supports this show.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Officials are formally dedicating the National Native American Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C. on Veterans Day this Friday. The monument is on the grounds of the Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian. It's been years in the making, and the design is like no other veterans monument. We'll hear from the artist, Harvey Pratt, in a bit, too, and he'll explain more about how the large art piece honors Native veterans. We'll also check in on a new virtual Native veterans exhibit and get an update on an Alaska Native veterans program. You can join our conversation in celebration too. How will you and your Native community be honoring Native veterans this year? Please give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. That's our number. You can also dial 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us first from Washington, D.C. is Harvey Pratt. He designed the National Native American Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C., known as Warriors Circle of Honor. Harvey is Cheyenne Arapaho. Harvey, welcome back to Native America Calling, and congratulations to you and all Native veterans on the memorial.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and it is a great honor. I'm just I can't tell you how excited we are about this.
Well, Harvey, you have had a very long, distinguished career as an artist. You just had a really interesting background. We were talking a little bit about before the show about just the different types of artwork you do. But tell us more now about the Warrior Circle of Honor and your inspiration for creating it.
Well, the Warrior Circle of Honor was really something that I wanted the people to be involved in. I didn't want them just going and looking at a statue. I wanted them to going to this memorial and becoming involved, to be interactive with it. And it was, and I wanted it to touch our past, present, and future veterans. I didn't choose a specific time. I wanted it to honor all of our veterans from time in the past to the future.
Past, present, and future. Get people involved. And when did the idea for a Native American Veterans Memorial first take hold?
Well, I think they thought about it early in the 90s, but they never made any avenue for funding. And so later on, they finally directed it to the museum here in D.C., and they set up a program, and they sent some people around the country asking veterans what they wanted in their memorial. And it came to Oklahoma on two different times, and I attended those meetings along with our Office of Veteran Affairs for the Cheyenne Arapahoes, and they said, Harvey, why don't you get involved in this? And I said, oh, they probably already picked an artist. I said, it'd just be wasting my time. But apparently they had picked an artist, and I made a couple of entries. I made an entry, and we forwarded them. I took them to Washington. I took my designs to Washington, and I was going to show them to the people at the museum, and I did not realize that this was a closed competition. You couldn't enter your name or your tribal affiliation, and I was getting ready to show some people at the museum my design, and my friend Walter Lamar stopped me, and he said, Harvey, don't do that. He said, if you show them, you'll disqualify yourself. Mm-hmm. So we just wrapped everything up, took it home, and we finally read the rules about what you have to do, and you couldn't, had to submit everything electronically, and so that's what my wife and I did, and my son. We submitted our plans electronically, and there was 513 entries from five different countries, and they narrowed it down to 120, and then I was one of the five finalists.
Okay. So it is international competition, hundreds of people that initially entered, and with a closed entry like this, I mean, there was no guarantee that it would even be a Native artist selected.
Exactly. They was going to pick people at as far as their design went, and I think that my design was not a statue. It was something that you could walk into and become involved in, and you could do your ceremonies, that's what I planned. You know, how do you reach 573 different federally recognized tribes in Alaska and Hawaii and reach them right through ceremony tradition? And that's how I approach my design.
Well, tell us more about the memorial. I know it consists of a large stainless steel circle. It's balanced on a stone drum. What does it represent?
There's a lot of facets to my design that I was hoping that Native people would recognize, and early on I realized that Native people are the same, but we're different. You know, we kind of have the same attitude about how you honor things, how you honor the earth, how you honor the spirits, how you honor the directions and the sacred. You know, you do that through ceremony and their traditions, and that's how I approached it, that I would include all these different aspects of our ceremonies that somebody could always see that their tribe did that, you know, through sacred fires and water and the air and the earth and the directions and the cardinal points and the sacred colors. And I expanded from there. And then the design developed. You know, we had so many people, architects that came in to assist us and help us finalize so many aspects of this design. We chose our design architects, Hans and Tori Boucher from Oklahoma. They did the Murrah Building design in Oklahoma City, and they agreed to help me. And people just came from nowhere and said, well, let me help you. We'll help you do this. And I said, I don't know if I can afford you guys. They said, don't worry about that. So I just felt like from the very beginning that this was supposed to happen, that the Creator had helped me and sent all these little people to help me develop the design.
Harvey, how long did it take you to come up with the design and then actually fabricate and render the monument?
Well, I submitted my first design in 2017. And so, from 2017 to 2020 was a matter of construction and development, refining and touch and things, make things all work together. And I'll give you a good example. You know, we wanted granite, and they wanted to know, and I didn't think about it. I said, well, I just want granite. I want this color. And they said, well, you got to have a color, a texture, and then I said, what kind of fire do you want? I said, well, I want a hot fire. And they said, well, no, you know, you want, I said, well, you want propane or you want gas, or how do you want that to happen? Where do you want it to control from? And I said, well, I don't know. I never thought about it, but I said, I want it to look like a natural campfire, you know? So that's, you know, we had to figure out even the type of fire you wanted, and then the type of water that you wanted. Do you want water coming out of the little pond there? Do you want to come and pump it through? You know, do you want people to be able to use it? And so there was just a lot of things that I had not considered. And I thought when I made the design that I was done. They said, no, you're not done. You have to watch over everything to make sure that they don't change your concept. And I think that was so important that they held the concept true and didn't let it change. You know, we had architects for the plants. We had water architects. We had lighting architects. We had different specialists that came in, and they just did a wonderful job. You know, and our design architects, the Boosters, were just invaluable because they had already gone through this, and they knew all the pitfalls and what was going to happen and how to get around them and what they needed to do to correct it. So there was just a lot of people that helped us.
Now, these architects that you mentioned, Harvey, do any of them represent Native architecture firms?
Well, we had Native people help us in constructing the steel. Mm. We had an Oklahoma business that was owned by Choctaws, and they helped us construct the steel and make sure that everything was done right, and we blessed everything and shipped it forward. They were the Redlands Sheet Metal Company in Oklahoma City, and they were just invaluable. That, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like just an absolutely breathtaking monument, and when you describe the details that go into it, having to choose the right type of fuel to burn the fire, and these different stone choices, and just a lot going on here, and sounds like a really strong partnership, and we're able to make this monument come to fruition. And so Harvey, it's going to open on Friday, and you mentioned the past and the present and the future, and so many different Native American tribes and communities, well over 565 federally recognized Native communities, and to create something that can pay homage to the wide range of Native veterans who serve and have served in so many different branches of the armed forces throughout so many years. It's just wonderful that this is finally happening. And again, that's going to be this Friday there at the mall in Washington, D.C. And anybody listening today, if you are a Native veteran or you are related to a Native veteran and you want to give any Native veteran a shout out today, or you'd like to give a shout out to our first guest on the show today, Harvey Pratt, please, what are you waiting for? That number to call, 1-800-996-2848. Once again, let's get some calls going. Native veterans, let's pay some respect. 1-800-996-2848. We'll be right back.
There's a lot on the line in the midterm elections: the control of Congress, the ability to appoint federal judges, and a host of issues that directly affect all voters. We'll review the political landscape that is developing after the elections and what it means from a Native perspective. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Did you know more than 51,000 Native and Indigenous people are living with epilepsy in the United States? Epilepsy is a neurological disorder that causes recurring, sudden, unprovoked surges of abnormal electrical activity in the brain. Call 1-800-332-1000 to get information and resources. Help someone you know by learning seizure first aid at epilepsy.com/first aid. The Epilepsy Foundation supports this show.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. We're recognizing the contributions and sacrifices of Native veterans today, and we're putting the spotlight on the Smithsonian's National Native American Veterans Memorial. Are there memorials or spaces in your community dedicated to honoring Native veterans? Join the conversation, 1-800-996-2848. That number once again, 1-800-996-2848. And we have a caller on the line right now, Aaron, listening on KUYI in Hopi, Arizona. Aaron, thanks for calling in today.
Thank you, buddy. I have a big question. My question is, John, the Hopi says we don't go to war, but the war is not good for people to go. Because my people say, you don't just go. That's what our son, our father, telling us. You need to pray. That's why things happening is going on right now. There's a lot of killings going on. Mm-hmm. It's hurting my people.
Aaron, I appreciate you calling in and sharing those views and letting us know the traditions there of your Hopi people and anti-war in nature. And it's certainly something for us to really acknowledge and think about, even when honoring Native veterans, and to be mindful of different tribal communities and their perspectives on war and what serving in the military sometimes can entail. So Aaron, really appreciate you calling in today. And Harvey, you're a veteran as well. And what would you like to tell us about your service there in the military? And first off, also thank you for your service, Harvey.
Well, thank you so much, Sean. I joined the Marine Corps and sent to Vietnam in 1963. I believe that I was the first Native American combat Marine into South Vietnam, because they didn't send combat troops until 65, but they sent us because they needed someone to, they needed a team to recover pilots that were being shot down, helicopter pilots and spotter planes, and they needed someone to protect Da Nang Air Base, and so they sent a group of us in there, and I was raised to honor and respect veterans, servicemen. And my uncle was a World War II guy. He was a Korean guy. He also served was still active when I was in Vietnam. But he had been missing two times in the Second World War, and was wounded several times. And when I told my mother that I joined the Marine Corps and was going to be leaving in 3 days, I'll never forget her expression, her face, when she looked at me and her mouth dropped open, and I called it the silent scream. And I wasn't quite sure why she reacted that way. And after I got a little older and after I came back from Vietnam, I realized that she was thinking about her brother, and was that going to happen to her child? So there's things like that really make you wonder. And I've had several people say, you know what, my mother did the same thing. She just had that look on her face like, oh my God, what have you done? And so, you know, so I think that the silent scream is, a lot of mothers had that silent scream. And you see that I don't think that men or women are warriors just because they went to fight. I think that they're warriors because they took care of their families, they took care of their children, they took care of orphans, and they took care of widows, and you know, they took care of everybody. There was more to being a warrior than just fighting. There's a lot of other things, aspects of it, taking care of the traditions and the ceremonies and the families. So to me, that was so important that we understand that there's more to than being a warrior than just fighting. You know, I'm gonna tell you a story. A long time ago, when guys came back from doing those kind of things, a lot of tribes wouldn't let them back in the camp and made them stay outside the camp and howl like wolves, and they sent medicine men and holy men out there to pray for them and take care of them, because they didn't want people coming into their camp that were carrying that bitterness, that hard fighting, you know, that, and they didn't want them among the human beings. And so we were treating PTSD way before a lot of people did here in America. Our family did that when I came back. They did those ceremonies for me, and I think those mean so much for us.
Harvey, you mentioned the silent scream, and I can relate somewhat. When I was a young child, and Vietnam War was still going on in the early 70s, and I remember one time being in an airport with my older sister and my mom, and there were a group of young recruits that were being sent out there at the airport to Vietnam. And I remember my mom started tears were coming from her eyes, and we were just watching. We were sitting there, and I remember my sister and I said, well, what's wrong? Why are you crying? And she said, those boys there, they're going off to war, and some of them aren't going to come home. And I think so many of us on so many levels are so grateful and appreciate so much the service of you and all the other veterans and so many branches of the service. Let's go ahead and take a call now. We have Julius listening on KYUK in Bethel, Alaska. Julius, thank you for calling in to Native America Calling today.
Hey, good morning. What is your name again?
My name's Sean. I'm the host of the show, Julius.
Hey, Sean. Good morning. Yeah, good morning. I'm working right now, and today's my day off. I'm taking my dog out. And if you serve in the military, armed forces, and you're a first responder, appreciate what you do. Keep doing. Keep your head up and put your life in perspective. Give thanks to the Lord each day. I wake up. I have 2 feet. I put my boots on. I have 2 arms. I put my coat on. And I did 5 years active army. I was stationed in Baumholder, Germany. I deployed to Ramadi, Iraq, 0506. My father, he was stationed in Stuttgart, Germany, 66 to 69. And I've been there. I traveled there. So life's good. Whatever you're going through right now, it's this too shall pass.
Well, Julius, really want to thank you for your service, as well as your father's service and any other family members you have who are veterans, and appreciate your words of wisdom. That's Julius calling in from Bethel, Alaska. And our next guest is actually from Alaska, so let's go ahead and introduce her now. Joining us is Candy Grimes. She's the Adjudication Services Section Chief for the Bureau of Land Management. Candy, welcome to Native America Calling.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for helping us get out the word to all the Alaska Native veterans and their families outside of Alaska about the Alaska Native Veteran Land Program.
Well, absolutely, and it's very auspicious that we have a caller just now, Julius, calling in from Bethel. And the Alaska Veteran Program, it started in 2019. Tell us more. What's the focus of the program?
Okay. Well, the Native Allotment Program actually started in 1906 with the original Native Allotment Program. There was a lot of restrictions. But the Dingle Act removed a lot of those restrictions, and there's no use in occupancies for the Alaska Native veterans who served at some time between August 5th of 1964 and December 31st of 1971, who did not receive lands under any other Native Allotment Program in their own name. If they served during that time, they could have served anywhere. They didn't have to serve in Vietnam, and they can apply for and receive lands. If it's a deceased veteran a member of their family can go through the Alaska State Court to be appointed the personal rep of the estate of the deceased vet, and they can apply on behalf of the estate of the deceased vet.
Now, where can our listeners go to learn more about this program, Candy?
Okay. Please go to our website at blm.gov/Alaska. Under popular links, about halfway down is the link to our website for the Alaska Native Veteran Land Allotment Program. And once you get there, it has our frequently asked questions. It has a link to the map showing the lands available for selection. It has the application itself. There are two tutorials on there explaining the map and how to go through it and select your land. It also has a tutorial about the application and how to fill it out and what's required. There's also links to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the Veteran Administration, and Alaska Legal Services. It's a nonprofit service up here that helps people fill out paperwork for the personal requirement for deceased vets.
Now, Candy, how much land are we talking about, and what specifically can veterans do with the land?
Okay. Well, each veteran or personal rep of a deceased veteran can apply for up to 160 acres, and they can do what they want with the land. There's no requirements to use it. There's no requirements to build on it. Most of the vets that I've spoken with are applying for this land to give to their children and grandchildren to use for subsistence use, mainly because most of it is in the rural Alaska for go hunting and fishing and enjoy their life.
Now, remind us to be eligible, you have to be either